Welcome to the Burn Bag Podcast. My name is Ryan Rosenthal, joined as always by my co-host Andre Ganuela. And this is the final installment of the Burn Bag's collaboration with the Atlantic Council's Scowcroft Center, where we have been highlighting their 100 ideas for the first 100 days project. We are joined by Barry Pavel, the director of the Scowcroft Center, and Matthew Kranig, the deputy director of the Scowcroft Center. Barry and Matthew, thank you very much for joining us today. I want to start off by asking you, Barry, first, what you see as the successes of this project in particular, the 100 Days Project, what you think they've contributed to the Biden administration as far as some new and unique ideas that the administration can kind of wrangle with. As we've seen, there's been many foreign policy challenges. And so, off to you, Barry. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. And we've really enjoyed and benefited from this partnership. When you put ideas out there, you don't always know their ultimate destination and whether and if so how they were directly adopted or not. But we just chose this as another way to put content out. And we're focused pretty relentlessly on actionable ideas. And so that was the main aim for this series, was not things that are already well known or mainstream, but is there something new that either is not on their radar screen or is just a different approach that we hadn't seen before? And so we took that approach and tried to give policymakers about 100 ideas that we thought would be useful for them to think about. And even if they don't ultimately adopt them, I think one of our goals was to encourage consideration so that they can strengthen and enrich the ultimate policies that they put forward. So that was kind of the ethic, and I think we were successful. We've gotten some good traction, some good feedback, some calls, some emails, some other media requests based on many of the ideas that we put out.
I think what's so great about this this idea that's filled with so many ideas is the diversity in breadth and experience that so many of the contributors had, which I think makes it just inherently invaluable in terms of just all these diverse perspectives from people of so many different backgrounds. But now I sort of want to kick it off to a broader discussion on what has actually happened in these first 100 days of the Biden administration. Matt, Barry, what are your thoughts, your first thoughts on this first 100 days? Are there any broader trends and themes you're seeing that perhaps you might not have noticed before during the election?
So overall, I think the first 100 days have been quite good in terms of foreign policy. Just having a more steady leadership after the turbulence of the Trump administration, I think is helpful. A lot of experienced people have gone into the administration. If you look at public opinion polling around the world, favorability ratings of the United States are up. And I think some of the major early themes of the Biden administration also make a lot of sense. The focus on strengthening alliances, the repeated theme of democracy versus autocracy as a central cleavage in international politics, I think is right on, given the challenges we face from Russia and China and the need for democratic allies to work together. So I've been fairly pleased, and I have a few criticisms that we can get to, but overall I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, I think I really agree with Matt, and the way I think about the problem is, start with the priorities at the rebuilding, the strengthening of the relationships with the United States' most valuable asset in the world, which is our alliance network. I mean, that's been really nice to see, and I think has had enormously productive effects. On some of the specifics, I was very impressed with how quickly and strongly the administration came out of the gate on China. I've since heard that the Anchorage public blowup was by design. And so very different from the Obama administration, by the way, which really, really emphasized cooperation with China in almost every potential facet, even when I didn't think it was always called for, but really hard, really strong. I mean, even kind of eye-opening in terms of the rhetoric about and to China, in some ways, even more than the Trump administration. So I think, the human rights emphasis in particular was just to me, an interesting kind of dog that barked, as I put it, on Russia. You know, very tough. I think you're seeing the beginnings of a broader comprehensive policy on Russia. Iran, I think, kind of as expected. Matt can talk about that in more detail. North Korea, not really a policy yet. And I worry, you know, that this could repeat the enormous errors of the Obama administration on North Korea, where basically having no policy was the policy. And as a result, North Korea built up a lot of its capabilities that now threaten the region as well as the United States. One thing I did want to mention, though, was this administration has been very fast on a lot of things, just very kind of quick output on some things. We just saw the executive order on cyber issues. There's been many others. For us in the Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security, seeing the interim national security strategic guidance come out so quickly and so pretty well packaged and artfully, we were very impressed with that. But returning to the issue of speed, I'm a little worried. I mean, China kind of keeps racking up various milestones in their foreign policy. And we're kind of doing lots of reviews. And I think it's important to do reviews. But I worry that the need for speed may be underestimated, in particular regarding China, which seems to move so fast. Trade agreements in Asia, the one with the EU may or may not come to pass. It doesn't look good right now, which makes me happy. But other agreements in the works. And so I just really worry that let's do the reviews, but let's get out there and let's start moving.
So Barry and Matt, you pointed to a handful of interesting things. I want to stay on China for just a minute because, you know, China, as you know, the U.S. government has pointed out, as most, you know, think tankers and people in this world have said, is that China is a primary threat to the United States. There's this massive pivot to Asia. But it seems like there are many limitations on what the United States can do as far as wrangling China. But I guess the actual question is, what should our strategy look like? What does the Biden administration strategy actually look like vis-a-vis China? And is it going to be effective? Is the Biden administration approaching China in the correct way in order to meaningfully compete in a manner that they're attempting to, or at least through rhetoric are saying they will?
So how effective will her China policy be, basically? It's really way too early to tell. But as I said, I think they came out of the gates very quickly, but it's going to be really hard in some areas to bring allies and partners around because of their own interests, because of the amount of trade that they engage in with China, because of other beneficial aspects that they might perceive as part of their relationship with China. So it's a lot of work. It's unclear that every one of the key allies and partners of the United States will see things the way the United States does in all areas. I'm most particularly here talking about economic and to a degree technology. I do think that quite a bit of progress is being made. I did want to give the previous administration a little bit of credit for kind of resetting the foundation. You know, it is a great power competition. This is a long haul. And so I do see the Biden administration, a lot of elements of continuity with the Trump administration on this, but also a lot of new efforts that are very allied friendly that are ultimately critical for success.
Yes. Well, we've been focused on strategy for China in the Scowcroft Center, and we've published three major strategies in the past several months and then did some spinoffs in the 100 Days series. And we do see a lot of things that are consistent with what we recommend with what the administration is doing. I think they're on the right track. And we say there should really be three pillars for a strategy with China. One, it's about strengthening ourselves. You know, often competition isn't about tearing down the other guy. It's about getting yourself as fit as possible. And I think that's true here. And I think we've seen that from the Biden administration, strengthening ourselves at home, strengthening our alliances, strengthening the rules-based system. And if we're in a strong position, we're much better able to compete with China. Second is the harder hitting part, and that's defending against the threats that China poses and imposing costs on the Chinese Communist Party. We've seen that also from the Biden administration, from the sanctions, coordinated sanctions against Chinese officials engaged in the genocide in Xinjiang, efforts to strengthen the Quad to defend against the military challenges that China poses in Asia, efforts to strengthen our and allied investment screening laws to make it harder for China to engage in intellectual property theft. So I think that's all been positive. And then third is the engagement piece. And we do think that there, even though the overall it's a more competitive relationship, there should be areas for engagement with China on areas of common interest, including climate change. And I think we've seen that from the Biden administration as well in the climate summit and other efforts to engage China. So overall, it looks like they've got the framework for a good China strategy in place.
So Matthew, you had mentioned in one of your earlier answers some of the failures of the Biden administration, or some failures that you believe they had. Barry, you had sort of alluded to some of the concerns you had, especially with regards to perhaps a lack of policy with regards to North Korea, among some other concerns. Do either of you have any thoughts on perhaps whether there have been clear mistakes, clear errors in the Biden administration's foreign policy and or security policy thus far?
Well, I can go briefly and then turn to Barry. So we're early on, so I think there's no fatal mistakes. You can recover from everything that's been done. I'm worried that they're too eager to rush back into the Iran nuclear deal. If we want the deal worse than Iran does, that's how we end up with a bad deal. So I'm watching that closely, but a little bit worried there. Two, in the interim national security strategy guidance that Barry mentioned earlier, the Biden administration promised to reduce reliance on U.S. nuclear weapons. And, U.S. nuclear weapons protect the entire free world. They need to be modernized. And so I'm in favor of modernizing and strengthening the U.S. Nuclear arsenal. So I think there are ways they could reduce reliance in ways that are responsible and some ways that they could do it in a way that could be dangerous. And so hope they opt for the former and not the latter. So those are some of the things that have caused me concern so far, but so far outweighed by the positive.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with Matt. I mean, it's just way too soon to tell. We haven't really yet had, a first major crisis that the world seems to present to most presidents, sometime early in their terms. That's kind of a defining moment. But I think so far, so good. I mean, it's a very good team of very competent and experienced people. They won't be perfect. Mistakes will be made. They're human. But so far, it's just very strong out of the gate, as I said. I don't see any major errors at this point. But I do think we need to move relatively quickly on some of these key issues, because the world doesn't wait for us to finish our reviews anymore.
Absolutely. And so, Matt, you talked about it at the top about steady leadership. And I think many of our allies breathe a sigh of relief when Biden won the election, because he's, one, rebuilding alliances, but also is more predictable. And that, allows for a bit easier policymaking. But I'm curious if, Matt and Barry, if the administration has surprised you in any ways, and maybe what this will mean for our bilateral relationships with our allies and adversaries.
So far, no major surprises that I've seen. Biden was pretty clear in the campaign about his priority of strengthening alliances, and they've made some efforts to do that in the first 100 days, including the high-profile trip that Blinken and Secretary of Defense Austin took to Asia. Afghanistan, Biden said he wanted to wind down the war there. Some people thought that maybe he would decide to keep a small force indefinitely. Others thought, maybe he would abide by the May 1st deadline negotiated by Trump. So the September 11th, the new deadline, a little bit of a surprise, I guess. Nothing major. And so I think that in general, having predictable leadership in the White House is good for U.S. foreign policy. I think a lot of stability in the world depends on the credibility of America's word, the knowledge that we're going to stand behind allies, that we're going to stand up to rivals. And so there are some benefits from unpredictability. If Kim Jong-un is worried that Trump might unleash, what was the quote? you know, fire and fury or whatever. I think that does have a deterrent effect, but on balance, I think we benefit from steady leadership in the White House.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with I couldn't agree more with what Matt said. I think there's been, you know, really effective and timely consultation with allies before major policies are moved forward and announced and executed. So that's really important, not to surprise allies and partners on major issues in which they have a stake. Surprising adversaries, I imagine that the Chinese were pretty surprised by how Anchorage was handled. I do want to reinforce Matt's point, just the masterful orchestration prior to that meeting of sending the Secretary of Defense and State to Tokyo, to Seoul, then coming back, the Secretary of State coming back, being joined by the National Security Advisor in Anchorage, the Secretary of Defense going on during the trip to India to continue consultations. I just thought that was, you know, a brilliant orchestra of consultation with core allies who are going to be mean everything for the ultimate success or failure of U.S.-China policy. I agree with Matt, too, on Afghanistan. Maybe there was one kind of problem statement, and that was when the president was interviewed about Putin, and I forgot what term he used, killer or thug or something. I think he said killer. And while I certainly agree with that, we want to keep, you know, nation-state relations at the nation-state level. And so when you personalize that kind of, you know, really important competitive relationship, I think Putin's the kind of leader that will take that and then, you know, take new measures to seek to damage U.S. and allies' interests. It almost gives him more motivation. So, you know, will that be a major watershed in U.S. and NATO relations with Russia? Maybe, maybe not. But I'm not convinced that it was particularly helpful, and it may actually end up being counterproductive.
So I had a follow-up question. With the Biden administration, some people have seen it as this, I guess, return to normalcy. I've certainly seen some articles written about how perhaps this might be a return to Obama's foreign policy team. Some people may agree, some people may disagree. But I mean, the context is that the Trump administration was such a departure, of course, from the norms of foreign policy. And Barry, as you said, perhaps like something of sort of like resetting the tone with China that the Trump administration did has carried on into the Biden administration. But are there any other aspects or principles that you see from the Trump administration that are actively being carried over into the Biden administration, or parts of which have laid a foundation, I guess, for larger policies by the Biden administration?
Well, I think the big one is China. I mean, the really big one, the recognition more broadly that the geopolitical landscape has entered a new era. We're no longer in the war on terrorism and, you know, a kind of different kind of historical moment. We're now in an era where great powers are really competing. It's, you know, a return to normal geopolitics in some ways, where this competition was not a feature before, because there was such a strong sense that the U.S. would exercise its power to reassure allies and to deter adversaries in almost every case. I think as the decade of the 2010s wore on, China and Russia both decided, I'm not seeing the U.S. really that willing to exercise power. In China's case, a very different leader in Xi Jinping. And so I think that is really a centrally important redefinition of how the United States national security establishment sees the world that is being continued. I would like to add one point about the Trump administration that I think is important to think about in the 2020s, and that is the need for boldness. You know, consult with allies, reassure them about our mutual commitment to each other's security. But these are really dynamic times in geopolitics, in security, and a number of other domains. And to catch up with that dynamism, the U.S. really needs some bold initiative to handle cyberspace better, to get ahead of the next pandemic, to deal with the coming age of bio technology, which is going to redefine our societies, economies, and security. So we really need to think about the need for really fundamental new efforts, including new efforts regarding how the U.S. national security establishment is structured for dealing with the world. So I really encourage that to be continue to be picked up. But I do think, Matt, as Matt pointed out, stability is really important, steadiness of hand, but you can do all of this at once. Consult with allies, steadiness of hand, but really take some bold initiatives to realign the United States approach to the world.
Well, I'll just add on that briefly, if I may. More of a defender of the Trump administration's policies than some. I think the chaos and the lack of the policy process was a real problem. But some of the underlying policies did make sense, as Barry pointed out, the return of great power competition. If you look at the Department of Defense, more of a move to invest in emerging technologies kind of for the 21st century, hypersonic missiles, things like that. I suspect that will continue under the Biden administration. Another area of continuity that many internationalists might not like is this kind of return to economic protectionism. Biden hasn't lifted any of the sanctions against China. There's no real effort to negotiate trade deals, talk of an economy to help Americans and the American middle class. And so I guess this could be another criticism of the Biden administration, is that their economic policy seems a little incoherent, because they talk about strengthening alliances and America's role in the world. And a big way we do that is through our trade relations, but has also talked about, sounded a lot like Trump in some of his discussions of designing an economy to help the average American. So I think that's an interesting area to watch as well. And how do they resolve those tensions in their trade policy?
All right. Well, one final question for both of you today. As we look past this 100 days, we've talked about successes and failures, critiques, and what they've done right. Are we going to see a quote-unquote Biden doctrine emerge? Is there anything about this 100 days that indicates to you what the rest of the term may actually look like from a foreign policy perspective?
I'll go first. I don't think so. I think, as I said, we'll know more when some major crisis comes up and the administration has to kind of, improvise and respond to it in a way that still advances its national security strategy and U.S. interests. And that's when, in many ways, doctrine, can get defined. Bush administration doctrine of preemption came after 9/11. I'm not really clear if there was an Obama doctrine, but there was a certain continuity of policies there. I don't think we'll know until something, dramatic kind of happens in the world and the U.S. is going to have to respond.
My guess is that the Biden doctrine will be something related to this theme of democracy versus autocracy. That's just been such a steady talking point for Jake Sullivan, Tony Blinken, Biden, the idea that we need to rally global democracies, our democratic allies in Europe and Asia in particular, to deal with the threat we face from these autocratic revisionist powers, Russia, China, and to a lesser degree, Iran and North Korea. So that's my guess. If we look back in 4 years, we'll see that as a central theme of Biden's foreign policy.
On that note, thank you, Barry and Matt, for joining us. Thank you as well for your support for this 100 Days, 100 Ideas miniseries, and for basically putting together the larger project at the Atlantic Council. Hopefully many folks will continue to check out these podcast episodes and actually check out all 100 ideas on the Scowcroft Center's website at the Atlantic Council. So thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.